How can we help people not only set goals, but identify the right goals and the best steps to reach them? I mean, one of the challenges of being an effective spiritual leader is learning to invest in the growth of other people. Whether they serve on your leadership team, volunteer in one of the missional areas of the church, or desire to take their next steps in their spiritual growth. That kind of leadership can be served well by the skills of coaching, mentoring, and pastoral counseling. And we're here to help you integrate those skills into your life today, right here, and right now, on the Five Gifts Podcast. You're listening to the Five Gifts Podcast, a weekly show designed to equip leaders in the Spirit-filled church. I'm Bruce Ritter, and along with my co-host, Charles Russell, we offer insights for leading the local church in the fullest expression of Jesus. If you're interested in learning more about practical theology, the gifts of the Spirit, and spiritual disciplines, this is the show for you. Welcome to the Five Gifts Podcast.
Spirit-filled minister ready to take the next step in your ministry training? Consider the Servant Leaders Cohort and earn your master's or doctorate of ministry. We offer in-person instruction in a small group learning environment that is affordably priced. Instruction happens in monthly two-day intensives in the Triad of North Carolina. Degrees are approved and conferred by Vision Christian Bible College and Seminary. You can earn your master's in 12 to 15 months or a DMIN within 2 years. For more information, go to fivegifts.org/SLC.
Welcome to the Five Gifts Podcast. I'm Bruce Ritter, and I'm glad to be with you once again this week. It's a Monday morning for me, but you may be listening to this on a Tuesday afternoon or maybe a Thursday morning. But we're glad that you've tuned in this week. You can find us always on Apple, Spotify, and even our YouTube channel. So we encourage you to tune in and tune in often. We're here to help spiritual leadership and spiritual leaders grow in the local church. My guest host today is Paul Kendall. Charles Russell is out today, but Paul has humbly and graciously agreed to be a co-host with me today, and I'm excited. Paul is gifted in the areas of pastoral counseling and coaching, and he brings a wealth of experience, not only to his ministry, but to us today on the Five Gifts Podcast. Paul, welcome.
It's good to be with you, and thank you for having me.
We're glad that you could be part of this today, and you're going to learn more about Paul as he shares with us, and we're going to take some time at the end to maybe unpack some of the things that Paul brings to the table in the area of pastoral counseling and coaching and some very unique areas. But today, we're talking about coaching, mentoring, and pastoral counseling, as they're obviously different approaches to empowering other people, to helping them grow, but they do share some very common skills that make them effective in spiritual leadership. So Paul is an experienced counselor in the pastoral area in coaching. What are a few of the essential skills that are critical to equipping people for growth?
Well, where do I begin? I would say probably top of the list is just listening. Listening to really hear and understand. Not just to hear the words that somebody has said, but to hear what's underneath them, what they're really going through, and really caring, having empathy. One of the things that has benefited me the most is I counsel and coach mostly pastors these days. And the thing that makes me most effective with them is I have already made every dumb mistake in the world. So I know what it's like to go through those. And now I'm going to try and help this guy, first of all, by understanding what he's going through and maybe help him avoid some of the pitfalls that I've experienced. So listening, empathy, and trust. Trust is huge. If somebody doesn't feel like they can really trust you, they're not going to open up and share things with you. So,
sure.
You know, I had a counseling center. It's still here in Winston-Salem, but I started it and had it for 12 years. And it became one of Winston-Salem's most successful Christian counseling centers. And I always said, I did pastoral counseling there, and then we had anywhere from 5 to 12 other state licensed professional counselors there as well. But I always said if there was anything that I could attribute the growth of the counseling center to, other than, you know, just obviously God's blessing, would be what I call sacred confidentiality. Knowing that this conversation is not going to go anywhere. It's going to go in the vault. We're going to lock it down, and it's never going to come out until you choose to open it up in another session. So listening, empathy, really caring, building trust, and knowing that the conversations are totally confidential. Those seem to be some of the things that come to the top of my list.
You know, Paul, you bring up something that's obviously a topic in pastoral counseling and all of counseling in terms of the confidentiality. And I think some people look at that as kind of the maybe the legal backing for counseling, but really is part of the skills of helping, that you're creating that safe environment for people to open up and share. And I think that's essential. That we're going to talk about co-creating relationship.
Yeah, and, I actually,
you know,
start.
What happens when it comes to getting people to open up and to share? I think that presence in a counseling relationship or coaching relationship is absolutely vital. What are some of the skills that come natural for you, and then what are some of the skills that you've had to work at?
Well, just to finish that last thought out, I was going to say that I start every session, whether it's counseling or coaching, with two things. One is prayer, which most of my clients are Christians and they don't oppose that. But the other thing is a statement of confidentiality, so that they know from the get-go that this is confidential. But some of the things that come naturally, I would say that I became a good listener. A lot of my counseling came from a time 30 years ago, a little more than 30 years ago, when my wife and I were within two signatures of a divorce, and we had to go get marriage counseling. That was a big turnaround in my life, and a lot of the things that I learned for myself and my own marriage and my own relationships, became things that I needed in counseling other people. Like, I had to learn to listen to my wife, to really understand where she was coming from, and to have empathy and to validate her feelings. And then when I began to counsel others, that was very helpful. You know, the last thing someone wants to hear is your feelings are wrong, or you're wrong about this. You know, what they want to hear is, I get you, I understand you, I hear where you're coming from, and your feelings are valid. And those are all things that I learned way back in marriage counseling that I was in for my own marriage. But being a good listener, to say that it comes naturally to me, it actually didn't come naturally to me, because before that, I was not a good listener. It was a learned skill. I can remember being such a poor listener a long time ago that people would even ask me when they were talking to me, "Hey, I'm over here. Are you you're looking everywhere else? Are you even listening to me?" So I know I wasn't a natural good listener, but I became a good listener. And then, you know, it's to the point now to where that's a fairly common comment from others about me. I had one of the best compliments in the world. My son-in-law is a financial advisor, and he said, I had a client this week, and when I told her my name, she said, is it Paul Kendall, your father-in-law? And he said, yes. And she said, he counseled me years ago, and he is one of the best listeners I've ever talked to in my life. And I was like, yes, coming through my son-in-law, that was like a, you know, oh, wow, what did I do? I made,
well, you got the, you got the gesture, yeah.
Well, that's how it made me feel. Fireworks went off inside of me when I got that compliment through my son-in-law. So listening and just really caring. First of all, I don't think you're going to be a coach or a counselor if you don't really care. I mean, that's probably what drove you to that line of work anyway. So I would say that's probably the number one thing, is just that you really care. I say there's a principle of human nature that humans return to pleasure and avoid pain. And if talking to you, you know, makes me feel uneasy, you know, it's like every time I talk to you, I feel worse. You know, I get two sentences out of my mouth and you tell me why I shouldn't feel that way. Or what were you, you know, come on, what were you thinking? Mm-hmm. How can you feel that way? I don't want to talk to you again. Mm-hmm. But if I associate talking to you with pleasure, this guy really gets me. He really understands me. Even when I tell him the dumb stuff that I have done, he's like, oh man, come on, welcome to the club. We all do dumb stuff. You know, I feel accepted. I feel like he doesn't judge me. That does come natural to me because I have received great mercy and great grace in my lifetime. And so I naturally want to give that to others. Mm. But it's just that that genuine feeling of care. I really do care about you. I really do want to do anything and everything I can to help you.
Wow. You know, I can really appreciate that you're sharing from that perspective. And, I know we're biased, but I think anyone that has experienced God's touch in their life, you know, we're people of faith. So we're not here to defend that. We're just stating that we're people of faith and we operate from that.
Right.
That worldview and that perspective. And I happen to think that people that have had an encounter with Jesus are just by that experience, we know we can empathize, we can experience and understand how people feel frustrated and maybe futile and even like failures at times. But there's hope because of who Jesus is and what he's done for us. And I think that's just a natural outflow of that experience, that you want to help others find hope and carve a new path in their life, especially toward life change.
Yes.
So, Paul, thanks for sharing those experiences. I'm dying to know, though, just as a counselor, in a relationship, whether it's pastoral counseling or coaching, what are some of the signals for you or the hints in that helping relationship that the relationship's working?
I think it's when you see that, you know, that little light bulb go off mm-hmm. in their mind or in their eyes, where you've hit on something that really connects with them. You know, there's a saying in counseling, just because somebody's sitting on your couch doesn't mean you have a client. You know, they have to really want to be there.
Yeah.
That's the major frustrator in marriage counseling to me, is it's very common. You got two people sitting there, the husband and the wife, and you can tell let's say the wife desperately wants to be there. Help us. We will do anything it takes. Just help us. And the husband is sitting over there, you know, kind of bouncing his foot and tapping his foot and rolling his eyes like, oh, gee, you know, we don't need this. I don't need this. She really needs this. And you can tell he doesn't want to be there. He's not a client. Hmm. And same with coaching. I really don't know why somebody would sign up for coaching if they didn't really want it. But there may be areas in their life that, yes, I want coaching, but now you're hitting on an area that I really don't want to talk about, or I really don't feel like I need help in. It's not until you can see that you've really connected with the person that they really want the help in this area, whether it's counseling or coaching. But boy, I'll tell you what, my sessions are 90 minutes. Most other counselors make fun of me because they can get it done in 50 and I take 90. But there's nothing more painful than spending 90 minutes trying to talk to somebody who doesn't really want help. Mm. But I'll tell you what, I'll spend all day talking to somebody that really does want help. And as soon as you see that little light bulb go off, like, oh, now I've hit on something that they're really wanting help in this area. Boy, that's when the magic really, really happens.
Mm. Yeah. Well, we're talking, I don't want anyone to be confused today, because we are talking about a few different helping disciplines. We mentioned pastoral counseling and coaching, and mentoring is another one. They're all different approaches, and we're not here to confuse them. I think they're different approaches for different situations, and some people are more naturally gifted at coaching and have been trained as a coach, and personally, I'm a little biased toward coaching because that's my area of specialty. But I do appreciate that all of them share some common skills that are helpful in spiritual leadership. So today let's talk about some of the skills that counselors, mentors, and coaches share that may, even though the approaches are different, those skills need to be in all three of them. And those skills can help spiritual leaders help people grow. They can help their staff members grow. They can help people that are just trying to grow in their spiritual life, spiritual formation. And so we're gonna hit on some of those today. And again, I'm excited that Paul's here because he's got such an experience and can relate to that with us today. So Paul, one of the skills that I think is essential in all three disciplines of helping people is co-creating the relationship. So talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, the way that I heard, well, let me back up for a second. You know, I've done pastoral counseling for 30 years, and it wasn't until just a few years ago that I became interested in professional coaching. And I hate to admit it, but at first I thought, I don't need that. It's, you know, it's really nothing different than counseling. And then I began to investigate it, research it, and I found out it is very different. So the best differentiating descriptions that I have heard that help me understand the difference is that counseling is like archaeology. You're digging deep into the person's past and finding out where these, you know, this trauma entered your life, where these behaviors started. So counseling is like archaeology, digging into your past, and coaching is like architecture. We're building a structure, you know, for the future. And that really does describe it the best, at least for me, to understand the difference. And I became interested, especially when I started counseling pastors, is I could tell in some sessions that what they need right now is not counseling, they need coaching. And that's when I began to pursue, you know, my education in coaching and getting certified in that. But one of the things that I think is the most common, you talked about the co-relationship between the coach and the coachee, or the counselor and the client, is prompting their thinking. When I learned how to coach, it was interesting to me because after I went through all of that, and I do see it as being very different, but it actually dawned on me, coaching is going to be very natural to me as well, because it helped me realize that my counseling was kind of done on the same premise. You know, so having someone come in with an issue or a challenge and you telling them, this is what you should do, that's one thing, but that's not the best, because they go and they try it one time, it doesn't work. Oh, the counselor didn't know what he's talking about. The coach didn't know what he was talking about. And so they scrap it and they don't come back. But if you lead them in questions and get them thinking about what is the best thing for me to do here, it's a game changer, because now it's not me telling you what you need to do. It's you coming to your own conclusion that this is what I need to do. So I can see those similarities in counseling and coaching and even mentoring, I would say, that one of the commonalities is prompting thinking, getting them to exercise that muscle, so to speak, of reasoning and thinking, and coming to their own conclusion. And if you coach them into the answer, it will be much, much, much more effective because they see it on their own. Oh my goodness. You know, this is what I need to do. I need to do this. So, you know, like at the end of a counseling session, I would probably be more upfront about, you know, these are some things that you need to consider doing in coaching. And by the way, this has been my greatest challenge in coaching is to get away from counseling techniques and just use coaching. And even in some of my peer-reviewed coaching sessions, they pointed this out. You keep doing this. I want to tell them this is what you need to do. And in coaching, you just don't do that. You say things like, what are three things that you could do to start doing this better or to change this or to get on the track of progress and allow them to come up with those answers? So there's commonality there, and the difference is the approach, you know, kind of the same thing with two different approaches, I would say.
Sure. Well, you know, we think of how those relationships form, whether it's a counseling relationship or a mentoring relationship or a coaching relationship. There are some agreements that you bring to that, both as a coach or mentor counselor, but the client, there's some expectations. And I think, you know, when you bring those together and you, whether it's a formal agreement or even an informal agreement, I've done lots of informal coaching over the years. In fact, in our coaching training, they really encouraged us to do what they called paper plate coaching, where you're not inviting people to a formal meal with all the trappings, but just over a cup of coffee, at a break during, a conference session, there's a chance just to investigate, well, what was insightful? What's something you can take away from that? And one reason I encourage coaching skills, even in like small groups, is because it invites reflection. And so when you establish those coaching relationships, I think it's important to establish the coaching presence or a mentor's presence. You know, you're there to help. You're there to be the kind of person for them that you're curious, you're interested. And so I think when you establish, I think maybe the beginning, the starting point for how you approach people is, I'm a coach and I'm going to be curious. I'm going to maintain a presence about me that shows I'm interested in them, that I want to help them. I think of some of the mentors in my life, and one in particular who was so influential in me, is he just showed interest. I just felt like that anytime he was around me, he was interested. He wanted to know what was I reading? What were some things I was learning? What was I dreaming about? And he could speak to some of those things in my life. But he couldn't have if he hadn't shown that interest.
Right.
And so I think those are certainly, you know, things that we bring, whether it's in mentoring or coaching or counseling. I think another skill, if we maybe transition into maybe one of the more practical skills of actually being a coach or a mentor, is when it comes to active listening. And, you know, one of the challenges in leadership is, it can be that we find ourselves so often in the point of being the teller. We're the speaker. We have the information. And, you know, I think one of the differences between counseling and mentoring and coaching is that, obviously if I'm going to someone and I need pastoral counseling, I feel like I'm going to someone who I believe can inform me. They can bring answers to me. A mentor has experiences that I draw from and that I want to learn from. Whereas a coach is more of, they're not the expert in the subject. They're kind of an expert in the process of helping me grow. That'd be one of the differences. Mm-hmm. But all three of them can really do a great job if they'll be good listeners. And you've mentioned that today. And I happen to think, Paul, that's one of your natural gifts. I know that may be something you've had to work at, but it seems real natural for you. But you know, when it comes to listening, there's an informal listening that we all do. Listening is not just an auditory function that our bodies have. Real active listening is going deeper. I mean, I use this example that I can hear everything my wife says, but I don't always listen to everything my wife says. I functionally hear it, but you know, active listening is about focus. It's about concentration. And so, you know, whether you're mentoring someone or counseling, that relationship demands active listening, you know, deep focus and paying attention. But then there's intuitive listening. I think that I'm listening not only for what a person is saying, but I'm listening to how they're saying it. I'm watching for energy levels. I'm listening to some of the nonverbal expressions. It could be a sigh. It could be a gasp. It could be what they're not saying, a hesitancy. And some of that intuitive listening, I think, is really a skill. I know I've had to work at that. That doesn't come naturally for me. But it's something that I find very revealing in conversations. I think I'm getting more to a person's real motive and understanding and context when I engage in more intuitive listening. When I think of what to listen for, I just jotted down a few notes here, and I like to use the acronym HEAR. I know that's a pun, but it's a good acronym for active and intuitive listening. And so, things that I listen for, I want to listen for their hopes, their dreams, things that they really want to improve, things that they desire to make better. I don't want to just hear about, you know, how they're going to accomplish their goal. I like to know, how is this goal informing and giving them energy and a boost toward the next step in their personal growth or development? I like to listen for energies and passions. Again, in contrast, sometimes you'll hear the hesitancy, you'll hear the fear, you'll hear the anxiety. But just listening for those things that seem to inspire the person, or the things that tend to drain their energy and pull them down. That's always something to listen for, and it can be an incredible cue when it comes to helping them. And then the letter A, attitudes and abilities, those things that impact how they see their potential, how they see their future, things that they feel like are barriers to their growth. You know, what are their attitudes about that? They can be, you know, sometimes a person's mind is what's keeping them where they are. It's not real. You can look and see from an outsider, their potential is real, but maybe the barriers to their future are more internal. They're more of those internal dynamics. And then I listen for routines. I listen for things that they say or the way that they talk about, you know, that reveals perspective. For example, if they're concerned that their communication as a leader needs to improve with the people on their team. You know, I like to hear how do they view the people on their team? How do they view the potential? So listening for those things, again, I listen for their hopes, their energies, their attitudes, and then their routines. So those would be a few things that I listen for. Paul, what are some things that you listen for as a pastoral counselor and coach?
I listen for what's under the statement, especially if it's an emotional statement, mm-hmm. that they're angry about something, they're sad, they're frustrated, they've got anxiety about something. I want to know what's underneath that. You know, I like the statement, you're not really angry about what you're angry about. there's something underneath that. And I have found that the quicker I can get down to the root of something, where this is really coming from, the more effective I can be at helping the person deal with that or address that or change that. Society has done a really good job of teaching us really bad habits when it comes to expressing what we're feeling. Society has taught us to talk about the surface level issues, you know, this stuff up here. But I want to know what's deep down beneath that. So, you know, I had a coaching session not long ago with someone that had some concerns about his progress in ministry. And he wanted to talk about all of the details about who said what and who was doing what and who was, you know, not following his leadership and things like that. And by the time we were done, it really came down to an insecurity that he had. And so we could have addressed those issues all day long and not really impacted them. He may have been addressing them by rote, you know, like, I'm mechanically supposed to do this, but I don't even understand what I'm doing, or I don't understand why I'm doing this, and not really been effective. But getting down to the real issue, what's really going on here, understanding why this is a challenge for me, you know, now that makes a big difference. Now I understand what I need to work on. You know, it could be something as simple as a crucial conversation, as Joseph Grinney calls them, that you have to have with another leader in your organization, and you're avoiding it. And you might give all kinds of excuses as to why you're avoiding it, when the truth of it is that you fear the reaction of that person or how that's going to make you feel. And if you have the dysfunction in your life of being a people pleaser, which I battle, I know it's there, I battle it. And sometimes I don't want to confront this person because it's going to be a difficult subject. I'm going to have to tell him something that he's doing wrong. And I just don't want to have that conversation because I fear the emotional aspect of it. But once I realize that that's what's going on, and that's because I'm a people pleaser, and combined with battling insecurities, two really bad dysfunctions to have in your life. And I've asked, you know, the Apostle Paul asked God to take his thorn in the flesh away 3 times. I've asked for God to take away my dysfunctions 3,000 times, and I've still got them. But I know they're there. I know where they come from, and I know what I have to do about them. By the way, which came from being counseled and coached. Yeah. Now I understand what's going on, so it helps me deal with that issue more effectively. So, you know, to go back to the simple answer, for me, it's getting down to what's really underneath all of this. What's really going on here? That's something that I have done. I had to do it for myself. I had to learn to do it when I was angry at my wife 30 years ago in marriage counseling. What, you know, I would just bark at her, you stop doing that, or you're mean, or you don't care, or whatever. That, again, that's surface level stuff. And then they trained us to, I needed a timeout. My wife, she thinks really fast on her feet. I don't. I'm a slow process thinker. I need to go in the other room. I'd ask for a timeout, go in the other room and think, what has really got me upset? You know, so I learned to do it for myself and then come back to her and express that to her. And sometimes it was, you know what? I don't think you did anything wrong. I just think there was something about your tone, the look on your face or something that just reminded me of my dad scolding me when I was 8 for something that I didn't even do. You know, all right, that's the real issue. And in the same way, helping someone get down to the real root of the issue and dealing with that, man, that just opens up all kinds of new ways of dealing with things, but now I'm dealing with them genuinely and effectively. I'm not just trying some technique that some coach gave me. He helped me really understand why I battle this and what I need to do about it in the first place. So mm-hmm. getting down to the real root of the issue.
Mm-hmm. You know, what you said reminds me of something I heard Larry Crabb say years ago. He said, and he was talking more of a spiritual direction way of helping people, but he said there's two things you listen for. You listen what you said, listening to those motivation, those drives, those things that maybe are not being said verbally, but they're being expressed, you know, in frustration or fear. But also you're listening for vision. You're listening for what does this person really desire? Where do they want to take this? What do they see as, you know, potential?
And what do they fear that's causing them not to take the first step to pursue that?
Yeah.
And where did that come from?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So listening is vital. And this is such a challenge. Again, it's a skill that can be challenging for people that are constantly looked to for information. And but I think one of the things to remember about communication is not just telling, it's also listening. And the better listener you become, I think the better communicator.
Can I just throw something in there?
Absolutely.
For pastors, really any leader, I would think. But one of the things that I have learned to do, I actually learned it from Jesus. And that is, if you do a little research, you'll see that often Jesus answered a question with a question. So like when the Pharisee asked him, what is the greatest commandment? Jesus answered the question with a question. What did the scriptures say? And so I've learned that from Jesus, and I will often ask the question back to the person. So when someone says, you know, what do you think I should do about whatever? I'll say, you know, that's an interesting question. What are your thoughts about that? What do you think about that? We just had a annual business meeting last night, and I probably did it at least three times. You know, somebody came up to me and asked a question about the children's playground. You know, what are we going to do about that playground? It needs some work, you know. And if I had tried to be the answer man, you know, I probably would have given an answer that possibly didn't even address their real concern. You know, I might have thought, is she asking the difference between a new rubber matting or the mulch, you know, on the ground, and not even really got to a real concern. But I asked her, you know, that's a great question. What are your thoughts about that? And really what it came down to, the real issue was her granddaughter's safety. Mm-hmm. Well, now that's a whole different issue, but I didn't know that when she just asked the question. So I was able to answer with great empathy and say, you know, I have three granddaughters and I want them to be safe. You're absolutely right. We need to do something. And it just changed the whole conversation. Same thing in coaching. If, you know, the coachee asks you a question, on the surface, it may seem like one question, but really underneath, it's a completely different question or concern or fear or whatever. And by just asking them back the same question, that's very interesting. That's a great question. What are your thoughts about this? I call it casting for confirmation. Sometimes I'll cast out, you know, some bait and see what I catch. Mm-hmm. And a lot of questions are like that. Even in coaching, I'm going to ask this question. I know way back here in the back of my mind what I really want to discover, you know, what I'm getting at, but I want to see what he says.
Yeah.
But if you just ask him the question back, you find out what that is back there, and then you're able to address it so much more effectively.
Well, that's one of the powerful things about asking good questions in a coaching relationship, a counseling relationship, even mentoring, because it invites the other person's thoughts. It invites them to think. It invites them to process. It invites them to share some solutions. You know, it seems like sometimes when a person is asking questions, what I tend to think is maybe they don't feel like they have the permission to provide an answer, that they're and as a leader, it's easy to be in that position of constantly giving the information, of telling people what they should do. And Paul, I like how you like just to restate the question to them. One of my favorite things to do as a coach is when someone's on a roll and they're brainstorming, or they're beginning to pick up on some traction and how to move forward in a particular area. I call it a question. It's actually more of a conjunction. I'll just simply say, "And," or "Tell me more. Keep going there." Just something to keep encouraging the creative thought that's happening. I think that's one of the beauties of asking questions, that it gets to the answers that they may already have, and they just need permission to talk about it. And I think in that kind of relationship, you're creating an environment for them to discover and to learn and to come up with solutions. You know, we've talked about listening and asking some powerful questions. Paul, why don't you talk to us a little bit about how we, you know, whether it's in pastoral counseling or coaching or mentoring, how do we challenge and support our clients or our coachees? How would you address that?
Challenge them in what way?
Well, we've talked about maybe asking them for, you know, their feedback, their solutions, their, you know, by asking the questions. What about when we need to push back a little bit?
Oh, okay. Yeah, that goes back to everything that we've talked about so far. Mm-hmm. Really listening to understand. I feel like you have really genuinely tried to hear me and understand me. I feel empathy from you. I feel like I can trust you. And I'm telling you, until you reach the level of trust, it's almost impossible to push back, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I should say in my experience. And I can kind of tell, whether it's counseling or coaching or mentoring, I can tell if the person is there. You know, again, it's circumstantial, depending on, you know, each person, each client, but it's pretty rare that I push back on somebody in the first session, mm-hmm. just getting to know them. Unless there's just, you know, something really clicks really fast. Mm-hmm. But I can tell when we're at the point where this person respects me and trusts me enough that they will listen to me, even if it's a little painful. And I've even used the phrase sometimes, if I think it's going to be really, really a tough question, is I will say, you know, you come to me for help, you come to me for truth. So I have a responsibility to give you the truth, whether it feels good or not. And I'm telling you this because I care about you, and then say whatever it is. Mm-hmm. It shows that your motive is really just to help them. You're not just being arrogant or cocky or I know more than you, and oh my goodness, how could you have not have thought of this? And this is what you need to do. You know, they feel like you're doing it because you really care. You know, even with raising our children, I've always said that the great combination for raising kids is 1 ton of discipline and 2 tons of love, you know. Same in coaching. Yeah, there's going to be something kind of heavy right here that I'm going to challenge you to do or to think about or to change. But it comes with 2 tons of love. I genuinely care about you. I'm here to help you. And I think once that level of trust and respect is attained, then you can push back and challenge. One other quick thought. I have found that people become intimidated when they feel like they're talking to someone who is smarter than them, knows more than them, some higher level than them. And I'm way down here and I'm intimidated because this guy, he's way up here, and I look stupid, or my question sounds stupid to him because he knows so much. I try and balance that real fast. I will even go so far as to maybe even sharing a quick example in my own life of where I made the same mistake, and I needed somebody to help me, you know, come up to that understanding, just to balance that. But as long as I feel like I'm talking to somebody that knows it all and is better than me and is looking down their nose at me, like, you know, how could you possibly think that or do that? I don't want to talk to you anymore. I don't trust you. And I'm not going to trust you enough to challenge me in any way. Mm-hmm. But as soon as I feel like, okay, you really get me, we're on the same level here, you really care about me, that really opens up the door to challenging someone and say, you know what? I went through this same thing about 15 years ago. Somebody challenged me, and now I'm challenging you. Mm-hmm. And I know you can do it. You know, I know you have everything you need to do this. That's very different than feeling intimidated by somebody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, we talked earlier about co-creating the relationship and how important it is to establish trust. And that's certainly not an area that's easily waded into if you haven't done that. And so when someone shares that sense of camaraderie and collaboration and that you're here to help, and when that trust is established, I think all great helping relationships are built on that kind of foundation. I think, you know, one thing that I like to do is I like to make sure that clients feel a sense of empowerment. It's very difficult to come in with the perspective, with them thinking that I have all the answers. I like to stay up front. I'm not the expert here. You're the expert on your goals. You're the expert on your direction. You're the expert on what's possible in your life. You're the expert on your family, if we're working on an issue with your family. And so sometimes restating some of their ideas or their solutions puts it back in their lap to say, well, maybe I need to rethink that. And you know, there's also an assumption that some people have, and that's that if I risk something, if I try something new, I'm going to risk failure, embarrassment, shame. And I like to say, what's the risk of you not doing it? And that actually gets it to some of those anxious thoughts about, you know, staying where they are. And so that's another way I like to challenge someone's assumptions. But you're right, you never do that without a great sense of trust. Paul, before we close, I was thinking one more step, and I'd love your input on this. You know, when we're getting to action, how do we help them establish next steps and create some accountability around them taking action?
Well, that goes back, excuse me, to the difference between counseling and coaching. The approach in counseling and coaching is very different from one another. In counseling, it might be more directed. We're focused on the problem. I might be sharing with them God's word. I don't always quote, you know, chapter and verse, but I'm talking about biblical principles that address this, and this is what God says about this, and how can you bring your life in alignment with what God knows is best for you. So that's in counseling, it's more working on the problem. In coaching, it's more focused on the client.
Yeah.
You know, what are three steps that you can take? It's giving them more agency in the process. They'll often have to sit and think about it. Well, I guess I could. Okay, so I need to exercise more. So I have a membership at the YMCA. First step might be to actually go to the YMCA. That would be a good for, yeah, that's a great idea. Okay, that's the first step. What's the second step? So you're getting them to think it through and come up with. Mm-hmm. And again, it's very different if I come up with the steps, you know, to challenge myself versus mm-hmm. someone telling me what they are. So it's ending that way. What are some steps that you can take to get you closer to this goal? And then the accountability is, you know, I have always found that if I try and go it alone, I start procrastinating and I'll do it tomorrow. And, you know, I'll go to the Y on Thursday and then Thursday comes and I'll go on Saturday and Saturday comes, I'll go next week. And okay, so what is somebody that you can pull into this to help keep you accountable? Mm-hmm. You know, well, I suppose I could pull my friend in, you know, I could ask him to go and exercise with me, or I could pull my wife in to help hold me accountable to this so that I have somebody other than myself reminding me of this, continuing to challenge me in those moments where I would normally tend to procrastinate. You know, my buddy's going to say, hey, don't forget, we're going to the gym tomorrow. You know, we're going to work out together. It's adding that extra layer of accountability instead of just going it yourself that is very helpful. I think just from my own personal experience, I have always kind of resisted that because I don't want to get anybody else involved because I know they're going to challenge me. But if I will just take the step and do it, which, by the way, I'm only using the example of exercise because that's something I'm personally trying to do right now. And I have been a YMCA donor for the last 3 years, and I'm actually using it. And I've got my son and son-in-law, you know, as my accountability, you know, challenging me to actually show up and do something. But if you can get them to add that other extra layer of accountability, it's very helpful in their process of change. Mm-hmm.
That's good. One thing that I like to do with clients is to talk about their previous wins. And I think when you can reinforce and celebrate with them what they've done well, I think it encourages continued action. And so when we make those agreements, like, you know, I've set some goals. Now we've identified some action steps. I want them to get in a habit of coming back to me, telling me how it went. And then, you know, if there's been some trepidation or some anxiety about taking that step, we may need to spend the next session. And of course it's up to them, but we may need to spend that next session on, is this really the goal? Is this really the step you feel like you need to take, or is there something else? And so we can redirect. But I think setting goals and taking actions are always good markers for either progress or maybe thoughts on how we need to redirect if that's not working. So Paul, this has been fantastic today. We're kind of getting close to our hour of conversation this morning. I really appreciate you being with me today, being willing to be a guest host. And this is fun. I get why, you know, we have a chemistry when we get together. We tend to have conversations like this anyway. Yeah. So we've invited the world into our conversation.
I've really enjoyed it, and appreciate you asking me.
Absolutely. Want to thank everyone for joining us today on the 5 Gifts podcast. We always encourage you to like, follow, subscribe, share, leave comments. If you don't want to leave a comment, you can contact us directly at Bruce at my website, at Bruce at coachingcardia.com. But before we leave, we got to hear from Paul. He's created so much content, some helpful things that strengthen individuals and pastors and even marriages. So Paul, share with our listeners how they can connect with you.
There's a couple of ways. I have taken everything that I have done in counseling and coaching pastors and tried to put it in 3-minute little clips, you know, on some social media. They call them shorts. They have to be 3 minutes or less, which is a challenge, by the way, to fit a whole thought into just 3 minutes. But I have them on Facebook. You can go to Actually, the address is facebook.com/pastorscoachpage. And then I'm on Instagram as Pastor's Coach. And I also have a YouTube channel that's called Pastor's Coach. And then I have a website that has all of that material on it that is pastors.coach. You know, we're used to .com, .net, .org. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of extensions now, and there's actually one that's .coach. So if you just go to pastors with an S, pastors.coach, that'll take you to that website, and then you can click the links to the videos page. And I'm up to 34 videos on a lot of topics, like we've talked about today, dealing with stress and anxiety, and even things like imposter syndrome, and all sorts of things that it's you know, the target market is pastors for sure, but the concepts relate to anybody in any, you know, any stage of life or any career. So I think you would find the information helpful, and it's all on there. It's all free. I just want to do whatever I can to help leaders.
Well, Paul, we'll make sure that all of those links get into the description below, and so our podcast followers can see those, as well as our YouTube channel viewers will have a chance to follow those and check out your resources. Thanks for sharing those with us.
I appreciate it.
We've been announcing, absolutely. We've been announcing that we have a brand new educational cohort for people that are active in ministry to obtain a master's and a doctoral degree. The format includes in-person instruction, coaching, and mentoring, a small group atmosphere, and if you sign up with us, you can complete your master's degree in 12 to 15 months. You can complete your doctorate in about 18 to 24 months. For more information, check us out at fivegifts.org/SLC. Again, that will be in the description below where you can find out more information. You can also reach out to me at bruce@coachingcardia.com. And my website is coachingcardia.com. You're welcome to check that out. And Charles can be reached at charlesrussellministries.com and charlesrusselltraining.com. And Charles has some fantastic methods for helping you reach the next level, whether you're in the marketplace or in the local church. So you can reach out to Charles. As always, thanks for joining us on the Five Gifts Podcast. We'll see you next week. Same time, same channel. See you then. You've been listening to the Five Gifts Podcast. If you would like to take the next step as a spiritual leader, we invite you to visit either of our websites or contact us for leadership coaching. We can help you reach the next level in your own growth and leadership. We provide leadership, spiritual gift, and personality assessments that give you a better grasp of your leadership style. And we also create a customized growth plan that empowers you to reach your full kingdom potential. We can't wait to hear from you.